Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Happy Friday, happy game day, maybe not after last night. Logan Gordon along with you for Hockey Central at noon on this Friday. Plenty to get to after a Flames defeat in game number two. They fall 5-4 to the Dallas Stars, but not much time to think about it. They are right back at it tonight with the back half of a doubleheader. Another 8:30 start from Edmonton tonight. Lots to break down from last night's game and plenty to look ahead to when it comes to tonight's matchups. Let's waste no time. Let's get joined by our Friday, our Hockey Central regular, not just Fridays. It's Peter Labardius.
Flames insider Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
They came out hard, and I think the important thing for us is that, you know, we finally were able to get our legs underneath us and come back and make it a game. That's what it's all about at this time of year. It's how you, you know, how you manage your moments. It's not always about playing a good hand well. Sometimes you got to play a bad one. And, we weren't as sharp as we needed to be. You got to give credit to them. They came out and played a real hard hockey game. But, you know, we're pleased with the way that we're able to, you know, to come back and tie the hockey game. And then, you know, it is what it is, how it ended up. But from a fan's perspective, what an awesome time of year. I mean, 1-1 series now, two teams going hard. I mean, as a fan, you got to appreciate it. It's great. Now we got to put this in the rearview mirror and get ready for a game tomorrow.
Well, Peter, if it's nothing short of topics today and the coach talking about it there, it's usually water off your backs when you win one, but when you lose one, it seems to stick with you a little bit longer, and the Flames don't have that luxury to sit around and wait. They're right back at it tonight after a tough one last night.
Well, they most certainly are, and you're right in your assessment, Logan, and that is the hard ones are just that. They're hard to take, but understanding how you got to that point, and if I was to follow up on probably the part of that clip that I thought was the most necessary, is it's not always about playing a good hand. It's about how you have the ability in sports and in the playoffs, when maybe you're being dictated to by your opponent, to play a bad hand. At the end of the day, if the Calgary Flames were playing 21, the Dallas Stars last night were the dealer, and they had a 10 and a 6. That's not an easy place to be in the game of 21. So, Logan, I'll steer it today this way, and that is this. You know, we talked about it last night in terms of, you know, what meant the most or what would stick with the Calgary Flames when it was all said and done. And because I think I always have a tendency to look at it maybe more from a coach's or GM standpoint, frankly, I was bothered by the whole body of work. I just thought there were very few stretches of time in that game that the Calgary Flames were at their best. And frankly, Jeff can't say this and won't say this and understand, because already that is in the rearview mirror. It's all about today and tonight and getting ready for an incredible, you know, a pivotal game in this series. But you clawed your way back on a night where so many of your players weren't at their best, and at 4-4, you didn't handle the last 3 minutes very well. And their awareness at a time when you would have thought the Johnny Gaudreau, Elias Lindholm, Sam Bennett power play goal that tied the game would have fed some momentum, it was really all Dallas. And I don't know about you, I could feel it coming. I really could. I was just watching that clock tick going, be aware, be smart in your own zone, make sure pucks get out, defend first. You're under some siege. And they couldn't get it to that point in time. So again, it feels in some ways like it was a very missed opportunity. And yes, I get it. Even my own focus by the time the post-game show, you know, went more that way, because in the playoffs, it is about results. It's not necessarily always about learning experiences. But to do better with more difficult reps, we need to go through it. I will say this. That is a costly, big learning experience for the Calgary Flames to be in that position and could have put themselves truly in a spot to go to the room, have 15 to 18 minutes to regroup, and truly give yourself the best shot you could to go up 2-0 in the series. And they didn't do it.
And it's interesting, Peter, because we've talked so much and it feels like the group had learned so much about when it comes to defending leads late and playing that right type of hockey when the game dictated it. And I didn't feel at any point once it was 4-4 that they did any of those things. And it felt in a way like a step back from the standard that they had set for themselves, even going back to the Winnipeg series.
But Logan, let me ask you this question. How sure. many nights have the Flames won games because by and large they had such good efforts that in the card game, they were the dealer. They were the dictator. Frankly, there was probably only one game in that series. Now, I'm not going to take away that they manage moments way better and there was incredible growth, but there was some similarities, didn't you think, between game two against Winnipeg and game two against Dallas? The only difference for me was that Dallas was able to dictate for way longer and the drop off from the Flames' best players to their least effective players was far more significant last night. That was the difference. You know, even in game two against Winnipeg, granted, a lot of that had to do with the fact that when you are minus key people, you probably can't dictate the same way. That was the situation that Winnipeg was in. And you have to give credit to the Stars. They knew, you know, it wasn't life and death, but they certainly didn't want to start crawling out of a 2-0 hole. And when push came to shove, their group was challenged. Their best people, Ben, Sagan, and Radulov, who Rick Bonus grouped all together, they were arguably the best line. And the Flames didn't necessarily have an answer. Not to say that that line was matched up significantly against, let's say, the Monahan line, but there was one line going for the Calgary Flames last night. One. And that was, again, the Bennett, Lucic, Dubé line. That's just not enough. Mm-hmm. That just at the end of the day is not enough. And when you add to that, well, Matthew Tkachuk was really never right after what looked like, you know, call it a spear, call it whatever you want from Jamie Benn. Well, now that throws another huge wrinkle into your plan because even as Matthew tried it, was he really in a position to uphold his end of the bargain with what's a great line for the Flames when they're at their best in Backlund, Mangiapane, and Tkachuk? So for the first time, what was really different about last night, Jeff Ward's never had to go to the blender in these playoffs before last night. Last night he did.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned it, Peter. I mean, look, it's something that has been a nice luxury for them this entire playoff. I mean, the Ronaldo for Jankowski switch was the only one that they've had to make. And then last night, even with Tkachuk, and I don't necessarily disagree with him trying to spread out some of his, you know, effectiveness throughout his lineup by moving Bennett and Lindholm onto a separate line or switching their spots. But it's something they haven't had to deal with. And when you lose Tkachuk like that and you lose that ability to roll all four of your lines, it just makes things even more difficult when the other team's coming at you like Dallas was last night.
See, Logan, that's why it was different. Exactly how you just explained it. And, you know, there has been some criticism. And I, you know what? Listen, if you don't think coaches with moves that they make all the time, no one questions what coaches do more than one group. Coaches. Trust me. Trust me on that. But I don't think there would have been anywhere near as much a need to shuffle the deck for Jeff Ward if Matthew Tkachuk is healthy. And if you're not, because what hasn't been discussed enough, I don't think, is when Matthew isn't available to you, Logan, on every single shift, well, you have to shuffle the deck that way regardless, don't you? Like, you have no choice.
Yeah.
So now you're mixing and matching to begin with. So that to me is truly the explanation. It's twofold. You needed to get other people going. So even in putting Sam Bennett, who's had a great series and a great playoff, and breaking those other guys up, well, what coaches do, and if you've ever coached at any level, you know, your job as a coach is to put all of your players in the best position they can. And when you understand that certain guys aren't going, well, what do I do to get them going? And how do I handle them? So that to me is the explanation for those listening today as to how that played itself out. As a coach, like we've seen from Jeff and the coaching staff, you don't have to make a lot of changes if you're the team more often than not either dictating or holding up your end of the bargain as a group. Collectively, they just weren't good enough last night.
And I guess that leads to my next question here. And, you know, keeping on the Matthew Tkachuk theme is, what happens if Matthew doesn't play, or, you know, this is a reality of this playoff more than others, and dealing with a back-to-back, and, you know, what does the lineup look like if Matthew doesn't play? I know it's been a quick turnaround. I don't know how much time you've had to think about it, Peter, but what do you, you know, where do you lean if Matthew can't go tonight? What do you think of what the lineup's going to look like?
Well, I don't sleep much, it seems, in the playoffs, so I've had plenty of thinking time. The problem is I'm not a coach, and I don't, at least I try not to pretend to be one, but this one is really difficult because, Logan, you can't replace what Matthew Tkachuk brings to the lineup. You just absolutely can't. So the way I look at it, without Matthew and all that he brings to the table being part of, I still think, your best line in some respects, not the best line in this series, but I think your number one two-way line is the Backlund line when they are at the top of their game. So when I think about Matthew, he does it all. So if I am down one of my top offensive players, do I not have to think at least in part about how I defend my opponent? So to give you an example, you know, when Paul Maurice was trying to come up with combinations to deal with the Calgary Flames, you know, his best guys really had to think about defense first. And that's a hard line for offensive players to walk. So if you're asking, here's probably what I am thinking, you know, in the interim. And I right now would have a really tough time potentially breaking up, at least to begin, that Bennett group. But I don't know if you really have any choice. The one line that I would be interested in still breaking up is the Monahan line. Because to be as completely frank as I can, I think that line needs to ask more of one particular individual, and that's Johnny Gaudreau. And I know that's about as harsh as I can get, but when I assess and I watch the way that Monahan is playing and how hard and how physical and how responsible he has been, Lindholm is just your most complete player. So yes, he has better nights than others. They need some more from some of their key people. And it's not just, listen, if you're an offensive player, Logan, if you're not creating offense, then you better not lack awareness in terms of how you play on the defensive side.
Yeah, you can't be a liability. You can't be on the negative side.
And listen, to Johnny's credit, this is hard. And I have great empathy for Johnny. It's been a really hard stretch. And listen, is he the same type of dynamic player that he's been in the past? No. Has he been able to find his way to a different place? No. So if your offensive game is not where you want it to be, then don't you have to dig in even harder on the defensive side? And the other part of how I think most people assess in their jobs and at their work is when I feel like people around me are truly engaged, I can live with mistakes. I really can, because we can't be somebody that we're not. But if coaches, trust me, they don't mind mistakes. What they don't like is lack of awareness. And whenever the work can be questioned of players and as a team. So, you know what? It's a really hard question. I would have a hard time, and I don't know exactly where I'd go with all my groupings. I probably do need to think about it a little bit more, Logan. But I might be, at least with one grouping, if there is no Tkachuk, I might put Elias Lindholm in that spot. And have more of a, even more responsible. Michael Backlund hasn't always had the greatest of time in the faceoff circle. It gives you a strong side right-handed option. But there's lots of different ways for Jeff to go in that particular respect. And he may have absolutely no choice but to kind of start more tonight with Bennett, Monahan, and Gaudreau, the line that I talked about, and then, you know, find your way with Derek Ryan being elevated up the depth chart, adding someone, and that's what it's going to come down to. What do you need from the player that you add? And the one thing I can't comment on, because I don't get to watch practice in this bubble setup, is I've heard from Jeff that he really likes the work of the guys pushing who aren't playing. What I can't assess...
He made a point of pointing that out yesterday in the media availability, that he feels the guys are pushing and making the guys in the lineup better. So if the coach is right about that, that's a good sign in this situation.
Right. So what do I need? What do I need? And this is an easier question with where I'm going to go with my lines, to know when I get a sense of who, if Matthew Tkachuk isn't playing, who's being inserted.
Yeah, and we'll, as usual, probably have to wait until warm-up or even closer to puck drop before we get official word on what's going to happen with Matthew Tkachuk. We're chatting with Peter Labardius, Flames color voice on our broadcast here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. This is Hockey Central at noon. Continuing the conversation from last night, Peter, it's been a conversation that I've enjoyed not having with you, because we've seemed to have it all the time, and that's in net. And for the last few weeks, we haven't had to have that conversation because Cam Talbot's been a stalwart back there for them and has really been a calming presence, I feel. Last night was probably, I would say, his first subpar performance. And it begs the question on a back-to-back and after his, you know, first slip-up as to whether or not the coaching staff would consider a goaltending change. I'm in the camp that you roll with the guy that's gotten you here so far, but... it's not always that easy when you have another good option waiting in the wings.
Well, the great thing about having a goaltending coach and someone of the ilk of Jordan Sigalette is he is 100% on top of all of it. And that is how Cam is feeling, physically where he's at, mentally where he's at. And the other thing that he has a great feel for that we just can't is, how's David Rittich been practicing? How has his work been? I don't think in the playoffs, in this case, the back-to-back thing isn't as important for me, Logan, as just understanding where the guy who has gotten you to this point is. Like, if you've truly assessed that last night was a drop-off because of his work level and his energy, now maybe I really have to think different. But if you're more inclined, maybe like me, to think that, hey, Cam was just one of a lot of guys who have played really, really well, and we can't forget about that today, because it's still 1-1. You're not down 3. And that's what happens for all of us when we get close to it. After last night, it feels like the whole world collapsed. Well, the world didn't collapse.
It's what Dallas felt after they lost.
Correct.
And look how they responded.
Right. And that's what the key word always is in the playoffs. How do you respond? So how do you win the next one? How do you win the next shift? How do you set your group up for success? I would tend to go back with Talbot, but I'm assessing now really, really close, because if the door swings open again, I got a lot of confidence potentially in the guy that's coming next.
For sure. And even with the, you know, sometimes we talk about the emotion that David Rittich brings to the game, and sometimes maybe that's something this team might need in a playoff like this, or a series that's been emotional. And it's going to be an interesting conversation going forward. And you're right, the back-to-backs are a little different in this situation, because you're not talking about travel. You're not talking about, you know, all the things that go into that. They're staying at the same hotel. They've got a full 24 hours in between games. So we'll see what Jeff Ward and the coaching staff decide to go with when we get closer to puck drop tonight. It's an 8:30 puck drop, another late one here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, our Flames warm up at 7:30 with Pat Steinberg. Lou, Fridays are our favorite days here on Hockey Central at noon, because it means we get to dive into the mailbag brought to you by our good friends at Ruth Chris Steakhouse. Hard to go wrong with a meal at Ruth Chris, and we're glad that they're still along for the ride here in the postseason.
Tim Collins, his group over there, they're the type of people that I want to be associated with. When you go to the restaurant, the standard, we talk a lot about the standard that has been set. Not only is the food great, the service might be better. You never leave disappointed. And in going there a number of times over the last couple of years, consistency. Consistency in the service, the food, and how you're looked after. That's my kind of place.
All right. And I'm aware that we have tags for our mailbag today. Riley, hit it.
Lou's Mailbag, brought to you by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Make your summer sizzle. Enjoy Ruth's primetime menu and dine on two courses for $49. Add an additional course or glass of house wine for $10.
All right, Lou, our winner today gets a $100 gift card to enjoy all that fantastic food and service at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. And our question today, submitted by Adam. We're going back for a little bit of a big picture one away from the Flames, but bigger NHL question. So here's our question for Lou's Mailbag today, Peter. What are your thoughts on the play-in round idea, how it's turned out in your eyes, and what would you say are the pros and cons about adapting this method going forward to give more teams a chance at the postseason?
Well, it's a multi-layered question, and thank you for it. I think it's a great one. First of all, this is a once, hopefully, in a lifetime scenario. It just is. I don't think it necessarily lends itself going forward, unless the health situation leaves us at, you know, this time or another time next year with no choice but to be back in a bubble. But even if they are back in a bubble, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, when talked about this subject or talking about this subject, they don't seem really interested in expanding the 16-team playoff format. They really feel like it's a great one. The competitive balance and nature of the league, and then with Seattle coming in, so at that point it'll be 16 in and 16 out. They love the races. They love what it means for, as Gary likes to call it, the competitive balance. For me personally, I'd never go to this 24-team extent again, but I might be okay for, you know, an 8-9, quick best of three. But you know, the other thing, Logan, that figures into that big picture is how long is it going to be before we find out what the new hockey calendar and new format and new schedule and new setup is? I don't know if any of us can assess until we know some of those answers.
Absolutely. And that's Adam, a $100 gift card coming your way from Ruth Chris Steakhouse, our promo team. We'll be in contact. Remember, you can always head to sportsnet.ca/960 and submit your questions for Lou's Mailbag on a Friday.
Lou's Mailbag, brought to you by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Now open Wednesday to Sunday at 5 p.m. Whether you're celebrating or just out for a night on the town, try Ruth's primetime menu and dine on two courses for $49.
Well, Peter, good luck on the call tonight, my friend.
Thank you.
Always good to chat with you, and we'll make sure to do it again next week, and we'll have a couple more games in the bag to talk about on Monday.
And by the way, on our pregame show tonight, we'll be locked and loaded for those lines. If indeed it is Zach Rinaldo tonight, so let's just cap it off this way, I could see these combinations. I could see Gaudreau, Monahan, Bennett, Mangiapane, Backlund, Lindholm, Ryan in the middle with Lucic and Dubé, and then Reeder, Jankowski, and Rinaldo. We're probably soon to find out as to why I'm broadcasting and not behind a bench.
Thanks, pal. Have a good call tonight, Lou.
You too. Take care.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Always great to chat with Lou on a game day ahead of the Flames and Stars Game 3 of their series from Edmonton tonight. 8:30 puck drop. It means another full evening of Flames coverage following the big show tonight. We'll have Flames game day live at 6. Flames warm-up at 7:30, leading you up to puck drop. These puck drops scheduled for 8:30, they usually tend to slide a little bit more to 8:45, so be aware of that. But Derek and Lou doing a great job on the calls with that feed coming in from Edmonton. Sounds pretty cool, even though the fans aren't in the building. We'll take a break and come back on the other side. We'll hear from our NHL insider, Elliot. He joined the boys on the morning show, and some important information from him around the league, and also see if he's got an update on anything Calgary-wise coming up before this game tonight against Dallas, whether that's a Kachuk injury or what his thoughts are on Johnny Gaudreau's struggles of late. That's coming up next here on Hockey Central at noon, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hockey Central on a Flames game day. It's Logan Gordon along with you on this Friday. Riley Pollock, Mr. 306, is your producer today. Earlier on in the morning, we had our NHL insider, Elliot Friedman, joining the boys on the morning show. Lots to get to after a Flames game 2 loss. Looking ahead to the game today, as well as a quick look around the NHL. He shares his thoughts on the Habs losing head coach Claude Julien for the rest of the series, as well as the recent play of Flames captain Mark Giordano. But he starts with Boomer and the boys by talking about a little bit of a potential goaltending controversy in Calgary after Cam Talbot's first subpar game of the series.
We're kind of debating the notion of going with Riddick instead of Talbot, and I feel like if there was ever a postseason where you could do that and not have it be a major story, it might be this one, just because we've seen so many teams go with one guy and then switch it up. Short time frame, a lot of guys haven't played in a long time. This is their second round of doing three games in 4 days. If they do go with Riddick, it might not sound the alarm bells that it usually would. Is that fair?
No, I think that's reasonable. And also, like, you look at Rod Brind'Amour last night, he went with what they do, right? He looked at their number one, he looked at their situation and said, during the regular year, when we go back to back, we go both goalies. And in the playoffs, he went both goalies. And, you know, there's that old line. If you have two number ones, yeah, and you really don't have a number one,
yeah,
I think you throw that out the window this time. I thought the one thing last night that was pretty interesting was that he didn't take out Talbot. And I understood why he was doing it. I think that he was, you know, trying to show that this is the guy who's got us here, and I'm sticking with him. And clearly Ward is comfortable with him. But I really did wonder what that meant for tonight. Did that mean he wanted to save Riddick? And tonight was a planned night off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to see that, because he had an opportunity last night. If he wanted to play Talbot again tonight, he could have taken him out and rested him for, you know, a couple hours.
It's a really fresh storyline here in Calgary. We've been debating how to get the top line going. The Monahan Gaudreau, it's last year in the playoffs we had it, during the season we had it. And it's great if lines 2 and 3 are providing offense, then you don't worry about it so much. But then you watch them struggle 5-on-5. This has been a tough slog for that trio. Jeff Ward broke them up last night, put Bennett on the right side with with Monahan and Gaudreau. What do you see in there? It feels like, because Warner talked about it this morning, Monahan, it goes through Goudreau to get Monahan going. Chances are, if Monahan's scoring, it's because Goudreau is doing what he does. So if Goudreau isn't, then the whole line starts to sputter.
Well, you know, we were going to show something last night if we would have gone to overtime, which obviously didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But did you see the excitement on Goudreau on that power play?
I don't know that I paid that much attention to it.
Well, you go back to the power play where, you know, the Lindholm scored. Or, sorry, Bennett scored.
Right, yeah.
The moment they got the power play and Goudreau was out there with the extra man, there was a new energy to him. You know, power play, love the power play. And he was all over the ice. He was energetic. He was carrying the puck with authority. He was confident. He won a battle that helped them keep the play alive, that allowed them to score. And the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm saying, wow, like, does he look engaged? And then, okay, where's the rest of this? He has to bring that enthusiasm for the power play to everywhere else.
Mm.
Now, I recognize that it's not always so easy. You're not going to create as much 5-on-5, especially against a big physical team like Dallas with really mobile D. But, like, to me, his enthusiasm for the power play, he's got to replicate that at even strength. Go back and watch it today, Dean.
Sure.
Like, when they go on that power play, you'll notice it. He's flying. He's excited. You know, you don't get your power plays all the time. You have to equal that excitement when you're 5-on-5. And, like, to me, it's noticeable. And when it's noticeable, it can be a good thing. But it can also be a bad thing because you're kind of wondering where it is the rest of the time.
Well, I didn't like, you say you noticed him being excited. I didn't like his eyeballing or looking for someone on the last goal.
On the game winner, you mean?
On the game winner. He was on the ice, and that is his man. And he's looking around like, you know, kind of the, who's got this guy? And it's like, you should.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. You're right. Like, like you go watch that power play again. You'll see how, like, he's all over the place. He's a water bug. He's like, he's puck hunting. He's engaged. He's like, oh, this is my opportunity. And you need to have that same excitement when it's 5-on-5. And you're right, Rhett. He was there. He could have closed that scene. Now, there was another player there who could have closed that scene too. But you're right. He was there.
Yeah, Does it feel like they're at a crossroads with him with this playoffs? Like, you either prove you can help us win in the playoffs, or maybe it's time with 2 years left on your deal to try to reshuffle the core?
Well, I think that what you're at is when I look at it like that, like the first thing I always believe, Ryan, is you bet on talent, right? And he's talented. And if you lose Johnny Goudreau, you're immediately looking for someone like him. Because it's going to be harder to score in a league where it's very hard to score. I think the only issue you have there, or the issue you have to monitor and be honest with yourself the most, is long term. You know, when do you get to the point where we say we got to make a decision on whether or not we can keep them? Because you can't let, unless you're a Stanley Cup contender and you say we're keeping them all the way to see if we can win a cup, which is, you know, which is what teams have done before, you have to say we can't let this guy walk for nothing. So I think your crossroads, like number one, I think they could, if they lose this series, Ryan, they're going to have to make some hard decisions. There's no question about that. They're going to have to look at it and say, okay, look at us the last few years. This is where we've ended up. Do we have to change our group? Yes, I think that's possible. But I think with Goudreau, the only decision you're making is at what point do we have to say, okay, are we going to lose him? So we better make sure that doesn't happen. That's the way I look at it with him. I think when you have a talent like that, you judge it differently than you do some of your other guys.
Well, and the only reason I mention it is that he hasn't been the same player in the playoffs. I think he had 9 points in 11 games in 2015, and since then there's been very little production. He's nearly a point-per-game player in his career in the regular season. He's nowhere near that in the playoffs. And so that's why if your job as a GM is to build a Stanley Cup winner, not just a team to qualify for the tournament, and when's his value going to be higher than with 2 years left? It's not one. It's not when he's a pending free agent.
Unless you think you can sign him.
But again, if he can't do what he does in the postseason, is he a part of the plan long term?
Well, Ryan, you have to get there. Like, there's two ways of looking at this, right? You're right. There's the postseason part. But this is a league where it's still very hard to get into the playoffs. And, you know, I think that, you know, like, one of the things we're all talking about now, are they going to expand it? And the commissioner isn't crazy about it.
Mm-hmm.
So Seattle's coming in. Pretty soon, only half the league's getting in. You still got to get there. And people forget that. You sit there and you say, oh, you can't win in the playoffs with Johnny Gaudreau. Okay, but can you get to the playoffs without him?
Yeah. Elliot Friedman, our NHL insider here on Sportsnet 960. Word coming out of Montreal this morning, an update on Claude Julien and his health. Do you have it, or would you like me to, because I know it just came out recently, he's had a stent inserted. He's obviously going to be in hospital for a bit, but
No, they're sending him home to Montreal. Yeah.
Tough. I mean, it's just one of those things. I wonder what that does to Montreal. It's a little bit of pressure now on Kirk Muller, which I'm sure he'll be fine with, but I'm curious how Montreal responds.
Well, I bet you Kirk Muller doesn't look at it as pressure. It's never the way that you want to get a coaching job. There's no question about that. But you want the opportunity, right? It's in some ways, it's sort of like a guy gets injured, someone's going to want the opportunity to replace him. So I'm sure Kirk Muller's like nobody wants to get the job this way, but you want the opportunity. And guys want to be coaches, head coaches. And I'm sure that there will be a certain amount of rallying around the head coach. You know, we're going to do it for you kind of thing. And, you know, I mean, like that Montreal Philly game the other day, I thought Philly was the better team, but I didn't think Montreal got blown out. Like, they're in that series. They can win that series. It's tough, but they can win it. And at this time of year, every little bit of motivation that you can add, and I'm sure they will, can make a big difference.
What did you make of Vancouver? Obviously an impressive win over St. Louis. St. Louis, one of those teams kind of like Boston or even Dallas, went into the bubble exhibition, didn't go well, round robin was not great, and then because St. Louis has yet to win in Edmonton. Vancouver.
Yeah, they got to get going.
With a real chance here to go up 2-0 would be huge for them, obviously. What have you seen in Vancouver?
I like Vancouver a lot. I think, to me, you know, like Hughes and Pettersson, those guys send an unbelievably good tone. Like, those guys take a beating, and they don't bitch about it. They just play. I really like that about those two guys. And, you know, Markstrom wasn't very good in the first round, and they won. And he was a lot better the other night, which is a good sign for them. St. Louis, I'm with you. They don't look right. And, you know, the other thing, too, is they're a four-line team. You know, Steen being out, and those are big guys for them. And they have to kind of get back to their identity. They certainly have not looked like themselves right now. I haven't liked them at all. I assume it'll be different. I assume they're going to be better. But they better get back there in a hurry, because I really like that Vancouver team. They got a lot of guys. I know people there locally have ripped, like, their kind of bottom six is overpaid and stuff like that. But, you know, depth wins in the playoffs. And they got a lot of good, experienced players deep in that lineup.
We were laughing earlier this morning about John Cooper and the Lightning waking up in a cold sweat with Tortorella on their mind.
Yeah.
Torts is one.
Is that the easiest team to cheer for?
The Jackets?
The Jackets, just the way they go out and work and don't get sidetracked and huge losses,
and
huge
like
wins.
There's three big guys left and they're all out of the playoffs.
And it's not like what Arizona's trying to do, where they just ride the goalie and hopefully win 1-0 or 0-0. I don't know. This is way different for the Blue Jackets.
yes, they really are competitive. Like, there's no question. Although it was interesting, Tocchet kind of ripped their guys after the last game, right? So it'll be interesting to see how they come out in their next one against Colorado today. But you're right. Like, they come at you. They really do come at you. And, you know, you can see where this is going, too. Like, Jones is winning the Norris next year, right?
Well, he's been so great.
Seems like an annual, like a perennial
coming out party. This is his coming out party. And you need your coming out party, and then you win the Norris. And that's what's going to happen with Seth Jones next year.
Well, speaking of Norris trophies, again, we're kind of all over, and I do want to double back. We'll talk about a Norris Trophy winner. Retro,
Well, I'm looking for Elliot to alleviate some of the Calgary fans' anxiety over number five, the Norris Trophy winner from a year ago. He hasn't looked sharp. Is there cause for concern? Are you seeing anything, Elliot?
You know what? There's no question about it. Like, I wonder, and Rhett, you could speak to this better than I can. I wonder if the older you get, if the routine gets thrown off, and we all know that in this day and age, the routine's getting thrown off.
Like creatures of habit, you mean?
Yeah, it's harder to get back into it. I have wondered about that with him. What do you think, Rhett?
People are going to be mad at me. He's played 18 playoff games in his career. He's a veteran. He's been around the league. He's won a Norris. He's been one of the best. He's played 18 playoff games. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that he's the cause of the team he's the reason the team hasn't made the playoffs, but he's only played 18 playoff games. He's getting a little long in the tooth. And he's always had five, almost half a year to get ready for the next season and be in the best shape. And this year is so different. I think that habit and that routine is off, and I think he's frustrated. And I think you see his face even after penalties, and he's getting hit, and he looks frustrated. And I don't know if it's trying to do too much or if he's just not there. And
that's what like last night. I for a second there, I wondered when Radulov took the penalty in the offensive zone. The camera cut to Giordano, and I think he thought the penalty was on him. And he had that look on his face that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But the one thing that I do wonder is, like I do wonder if when you're him and you're his age, and you play and compete to the level he's at, and he keeps a pretty high standard of the way he plays, the fact that it's been so thrown off, I do wonder if quote unquote he's off. Like, that's what I see. I see, and there's actually, like, I wanted to look at some of the older players. Like, you know, Spezza played pretty well for Toronto, and he's 37. He's older than Giordano, but he doesn't play as much as Giordano does. Like, it's probably something I should look at today is some of the older guys and how have they played.
Perry was good last night.
Well, it's a good point you make. Like Spezza, yeah. you can be in your late 30s and be on the fourth line. This is a late 30s guy as a number one defenseman.
Yes.
No team
has
that.
And you know who you didn't notice? You know what? Perry was good last night. But again, he's kind of sheltered now, right? Like, Pavelski hasn't been great.
No.
And I do wonder if that has something to do with it, that you train your body a certain way. Like, I think if you're Calgary now, and again, this is a concern down the road, is Giordano going to be able to recuperate in time for next year?
Which is this year.
Right? Which is this year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Expansion draft in like 9 months or whatever. There's lots
of
decisions.
Well, I mean, I'll watch for it tonight, but that's actually what I was thinking about last night. Like, I'm looking at him. I wonder, like, this is something he's actually giving me a homework assignment today, guys. Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, Giordano's what, 36?
Turns 37 October 3rd, I think.
Okay, how many 37-year-olds right now have as big a role in their teams as Giordano has?
Well, you know what? Somebody just texted in. Duncan Keith is 37. He's still in that top pairing for Chicago. But outside of that, outside of
necessity,
that,
probably.
But either way, right? Just whether it's necessity or by choice.
Duncan Keith is a physical freak.
Yeah.
And Giordano is too, like, to his credit. But Keith is like the NHL's physical. But that's, you know, that's a good one.
Chara?
That's a really good question. Like, how many guys who are 37 years old are carrying the load that these two guys are?
There you go. Our NHL insider, Elliot Friedman, joining Boomer, Rhett, and Pinder in the morning. Lots to get to. Interesting conversation on Mark Giordano at the end of it there. A conversation for a future day, no doubt, because as of today, the Flames will need Giordano. It's game three, Flames and Stars, set for tonight, another 8:30 puck drop. We'll have all your coverage here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. The big show is set to kick off next with Will Nault joining the program. Busy day on the show today. We'll have Jason Lockett for it, talk some NFL later on. Eric Francis joins Pat on the Sports Drive at 5, and during the 1 o'clock hour, Justin Dunk joins us to talk some CFL football and, of course, reaction to last night's Flames loss and a look ahead to tonight's matchup. All that and more coming up. This has been Hockey Central at Noon, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.